Ivo Kuka fled his home after he was imprisoned and tortured as a political prisoner in Cameroon. The UK government have refused to even listen to him and want to send him back to face more of the same treatment. In Ivo's own words, they have signed his death warrant. Ivo was a member of the Southern Cameroon's National Council, a peaceful organisation which calls for a return to independence for the English-speaking region of Cameroon. The SCNC has been banned by the authorities. Ivo attended an SCNC demonstration and was subsequently arrested by the police. He was detained, during which time he was tortured, hung upside down, beaten on the soles of his feet, beaten in the face, for which he received stitches, and sexually assaulted. Ivo has been imprisoned in a UK detention centre since his arrival in this country. He has been denied justice and the right to fairly claim asylum. He is now at risk of removal. The following programme is a joint production between Afghan Voice Radio and Refugee Radio to help Ivo's voice to be heard.
Welcome to Refugee Radio.
Immediately after his arrival in the UK, Ivo Kuka tried to claim asylum on the basis that he had been persecuted in Cameroon as part of the English-speaking minority and that his life would be at risk if he returned. Ivo was told that his case would be fast-tracked. Nobody explained what fast-track meant. According to the National Coalition of Anti-Deportation Campaigners, time is very short if your case is put in the fast-track category. This makes it very difficult for you to get good legal advice and gather the evidence you need. The detained fast-track system accounts for a high proportion of the people deported from the UK. The border agency claims that this shows the system is working. But to campaigners, this is a matter of grave concern, as so many people in need of protection are not getting the chance to explain and try to prove their story because of the time pressures the system brings. For Ivo, this meant no time at all. Ivo is being held in the detention centre in Harmondsworth, along with 600 others. Immigration detention centres are run like prisons. They are managed for profit by private companies such as the notorious Group 4 Security, G4S, or GEO. There have been a number of deaths recently in detention, many under mysterious circumstances. We have heard repeatedly that people in detention are not able to access proper legal help. We have also heard that people cannot access proper medical help. Every day there is a different doctor because the system is so bad that doctors feel they cannot work there without violating their Hippocratic oaths. And all they can do is dish out paracetamol. Despite the government's pre-election promise to end child detention in the UK, innocent children and their families are still repeatedly being locked up. Ariadne from Afghan Voice Radio spoke with Ivo over the telephone about his situation.
Okay, Kuka, what happened to you?
Yeah, I came to the UK on a visit last December. Yeah. My arrival here, I was really planning to go back. But after some circumstances, I discovered that what happened back home, I was really wanted and my life was at stake. So I changed my mind and said, let me not risk it all. Mm-hmm. I decided to seek asylum. And I moved myself to the Home Office, to the authorities, to declare myself. When I declared myself, I find myself in detention.
You got arrested as soon as you applied for asylum?
Yes, I was. I went there by myself. After the screening interview, I was directly sent to the detention centre that very night.
That very night. And since when have you been in that detention centre?
I've been in detention centre exactly 3 weeks, 4 days today.
And what happened to you in detention?
Yeah, right here in the detention center, the first 5 days, nobody attended to me. And it was the sixth day that I was called up, told me I had a legal visit. So I went up, I got in touch with one solicitor. She told me she was representing me in my case. I said, okay, good and fine. About less than 10 minutes later, one representative came from home office. He said he's the one conducting my interview.
Yeah.
I had no time to talk to my solicitor, nothing at all. So we just sat there. After the briefing, we started the interview.
Okay, and this is the main interview, the big interview?
Yeah, that was the big interview.
Yeah. And was that recorded?
In writing, it was done in writing.
Just writing, no recordings?
Yeah, it was recorded in writing, yeah.
Writing, yes. You just got a solicitor appointed to you, or did you choose your own solicitor?
The solicitor was appointed to me. I did not choose any solicitor.
Okay, and you're still with that solicitor?
After my interview, the following day, when I got the letter from the Home Office, a refusal letter from the Home Office the following day, I called the solicitor.
Yeah.
On Friday 25th, I called the solicitor, and she talked to me. She was aware of what was going on. I said, okay. On Monday the 29th, I contacted the solicitor again, twice over the phone. She told me she's not going to handle my case anymore, that she can only handle my case after my appeal, that I should do the appeal by myself after the appeal before she can come in. So I asked, but how? I don't know the process going about the day thing.
So
I'm not of the law. I cannot do this. But
so you don't have any access to legal advice at all then now?
That very day I went to the welfare office here in the center. I complained to the welfare office, that my solicitor has just abandoned me in my process. And this today, the 29th, is the last day he gave me to file in the appeal. And she just called me exactly 2:19 p.m.
Okay.
The afternoon, it was 2:19 p.m. that she called me, saying that she cannot continue with the case. And offices were to close by 5. So there was no way for me to file in an appeal within that time, since I don't know the processes. So I went up to the welfare office. I complained. I laid a complaint. Yeah. They gave me a form to file in a formal complaint.
Okay.
I did it formally and faxed to the number they gave me. Up to now, I haven't got any response from me.
You did appeal now yourself.
I don't know anything about appeal. All the documents are still with me. The only thing I did on that very 29th is I wrote to the first-year tribunal. I wrote a letter to them, pleading with them to give me to extend my deadline for the submission of my appeal because my solicitor has just abandoned me on the way, so I can't do it. And I haven't received any response from the first-year tribunal. I don't know what's going on in that way. Yeah?
The interview, how did that go?
Yeah, the interview officer told me he will be asking me questions on depending on what I said on my screening interview when I claimed asylum. I said yes. So he started the interview. He was asking me questions from what I have initially said on my screening interview and what I was answering. So at the end of the day, when the refusal letter was sent and the reason for refusal, I discovered that there were a lot of mistakes in it. For example, in my screening interview, the Home Office, the person who conducted my interview asked me a question that, have I ever been arrested or detained I asked the question back to the interviewing officer, is it in my own country or out of my country? Is it including my own country? She said, out of my country. So I have been to Nigeria and I have been to the UK. I've never been arrested or detained for any crime. So I said, no, I've never been arrested. But in my refusal letter, my credibility was undermined because he said, I said to the screening interview that I have never been arrested, and here I'm saying that I have been arrested. I repeated that I have never been arrested out of my country, and that is what I insisted in the screening interview. I've never been arrested out of my country. Because so he came to undermine my credibility because of that question. And there are many, many more that I've outlined here. I got them on the paper. I have outlined all those points.
Besides those mistakes, did you have a translator?
Were you It was conducted in English, so I had no translator.
Yeah, your English was good enough for that, or did you miss a translator?
I did not need a translator.
Okay. Of course, you were put on fast track.
Yeah.
Have you been told what that is?
I have never been told. It's in here that I discovered what is fast track. Nobody has, the Home Office, nobody explained to me. The person who did my screening interview just told me, when I was signing the last paper, she told me I am on fast track. That was just all. I never knew what fast track, what was the meaning of fast track.
Mm.
When I arrived at the center before, I was finding out, I knew what fast track was all about.
What is life like in detention center? Can you explain that to people?
Life here is really appalling, as I can say. Life here is not worth saying, really, because the food, first of all, is bad.
Yes.
Everybody is complaining about the food.
Yeah.
And secondly, you are sick, you go to the doctor, today you meet this doctor.
Yeah.
He gives you paracetamol. You go back, you make an appointment, you go tomorrow, you meet Dr. B. He gives you a Ferragam.
Yeah.
The third day, you go, you meet another doctor. There's no follow-up in the process at all. In my case in particular, when I requested to see the doctor. I requested for the rule 35. I went there on the appointment. I met the doctor. I explained to the doctor what really is wrong with me. He did everything. But on my greatest surprise, the day I was going to collect the rule 35, I saw that the point I insisted on it has not been included in the rule 35. Really, it's a pity for me to say it, but I must say it. I told the doctor, really, I am at the moment, I'm passing out blood with my stool.
Yeah.
Because I was sexually abused. I'm sorry to say it, but I must say it. I was sexually abused in the cell while in Cameroon, while in detention. I was drugged and the act happened. So I've been passing out blood. I don't know what's wrong. So I took the rule 35. It was not included. I booked another appointment.
Yeah.
On going there, I met with another doctor. The doctor told me she cannot do the rule 35 anymore. I said, this rule 35 is going to go include in my asylum claim file. How will you not do it? She said she cannot do it. It ended like that.
And
I came down.
Sorry to interrupt, but what is rule 35?
Rule 35 here in the detention center is a report the doctor conducts. If you have been tortured, he examines you and put it all in writing. That's called the detention rule 35. I have on my lip. I was hit with a gun.
Yeah.
So my lip, the gun had to tear my part of my lips on the left side. There are stitches on it, and the teeth inside was broken. He stated that quite all right. Under the soles of my feet were beaten. He mentioned that. But the issue of the blood I have been passing all along, he did not mention it. And that was very vital to my claim.
When they want to send you back, what will happen to you?
really, I am really at stake. My life is going back home is it's not an option at the moment because I'm going to just to face the death penalty, as I can say, because it's not worth going. Let me just say that it's not worth going back.
Basically, you're saying if they want to send you back, then they send you back to death, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Basically, what you're telling me that altogether you're being treated quite badly, and you want justice.
Yeah. I want justice. That's it. In my big interview, he asked me at the end that why have I not mentioned a particular incident from the beginning. You said you'll be asking me questions depending on what I said in the screening interview. So I'm waiting for you to ask me questions. I cannot go ahead and narrate a story that you have not asked.
So
if you don't ask me that question, you don't come to undermine my credibility at the end of the interview. I was not the one to say, Mr. Officer, please, ask me this question. It's not proper. Because he had the question, he had everything I've said in the screening interview. He was the one asking me the question, not me asking him questions. So I could not go ahead giving an answer to a question which has not been asked.
Politically, my life is at risk.
Yeah.
In Cameroon, due to my affiliation with the SCNC, just that fact, my life is well at risk. And my involvement to what happened on the bridge at the eve of the elections, all that combined together, my life is not. My life really is at risk in Cameroon if I'm to return back to Cameroon.
And this counts for people who oppose the government, is that correct?
Yeah, people who oppose really face all this type of trouble, and mostly those of us from the English section, we face too much of this persecution.
What are the prospects now while you're in detention?
At the moment, I don't know anything because I wrote to my MP. He wrote to the Home Office on my behalf. I have the copy of what he wrote here with me, telling the Home Office that I have complained to him that I got no solicitor, and the Home Office will review my case, give me time to look for another solicitor. So I've been waiting for the Home Office maybe to tell me what to do, so they haven't contacted me yet. I don't know anything.
A bit more about life in detention. Are there any activities to do?
It's just the same process every day. Just the same process. You get up, you go to the dining room, whatever you need, you take it. Just the same. And people are just facing the same problem. I got one other example here. A guy from Central African Republic. His asylum was refused as well. And in the refusal letter, they are telling him that he will be sent to Afghanistan.
Well, he's from Africa.
He's from Africa. Let me just read out what was written here. The writing here is going to send him to Afghanistan if he refuses to go. They say, if you fail to organize your own departure from the United Kingdom, arrangements will be made for you to be removed to Afghanistan. Failure to assist with the redocumentation process may lead to prosecution. So a person from Central African Republic in Africa refused asylum is sent to Afghanistan.
This is clearly an example that I think they do not pay attention at all.
They do not pay attention in what they are doing.
What are your plans now?
Yeah, I will try to get another solicitor because in my interview, I told them I was waiting for proof to support my claim from Cameroon. But they went ahead issuing me a refusal letter less than 24 hours. It was impossible for me to produce those proofs from Cameroon. But within this time, I've gotten the proofs from Cameroon.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to either to appeal or to go with a fresh claim.
They had this ridiculous demand for you to provide evidence within 24 hours, wasn't it?
Then it's difficult, it's possible. And they are insisting on the originals of the documents. They are insisting on the original of documents. The originals cannot leave Cameroon and be here in the UK within 24 hours.
Yeah. Is there anything you would like to share with our listeners?
I am telling the audience out there to unite with one voice
and send a message to the authorities to review this issue of asylum here in the UK, because those handling these cases at the UK border, they don't really concentrate on the claim. They don't take time to handle the matters of individuals. It is the same process they give out to everybody. One example is just the one I just read to you now. A person from Central Africa being sent to Afghanistan. That's the process. You go to asylum, you claim asylum, they fill in your name, they produce all those papers that they have sent to A, they give to B. They produce those papers that they have sent to B, they give to A, to C. So I'm telling the audience that will be listening to help us who are detained here to say all these things to the authorities out there.
Ivo Kuka is from Cameroon in West Central Africa. The country has been ruled by President Paul Biya and his CPDM party since it was created in 1985. Paul Biya retains the power to control legislation and rule by decree. He was re-elected in 2011, but the election was flawed by irregularities, including the failure to properly distribute all voter cards, late opening of polling stations, multiple voting, ballot box stuffing, the absence of indelible ink, and intimidation of voters. The most important human rights problems in the country are security force abuses, particularly of detainees and prisoners, denial of fair and speedy public trial, and restrictions on freedom of assembly. Other major human rights abuses include arbitrary arrest and detention, prolonged and pre-trial detention, and life-threatening prison conditions. The government harassed and imprisoned journalists, restricted freedoms of speech, press and association, and impeded freedom of movement. Corruption is pervasive at all levels of government. Societal violence and discrimination against women and girls, including female genital mutilation, is a major problem. Trafficking in children and discrimination against pygmies, gays and lesbians occurred. The government has restricted worker rights and the activities of independent labour organisations. Hereditary servitude, forced labour, including by children, and child labour are also problems. According to the UN, there are continued reports that security forces tortured, beat, harassed or otherwise abused citizens, prisoners and detainees. Security forces also reportedly subjected women, children and elderly persons to abuse. According to the report by the Ministry of Justice on Human Rights in Cameroon in 2010, 296 police officers and 115 soldiers and gendarmes were sanctioned or prosecuted for misconduct in 2010. 8 security force members were tried for alleged torture in 2010. Of the 8, 2 were convicted, 2 were acquitted, and 4 cases are still pending. Prison conditions remained harsh and life-threatening during the past few years. Numerous international human rights organisations and some prison personnel have reported that torture is widespread. In Douala's New Bell prison and other minimum security detention centres, prison guards inflicted beatings and prisoners reportedly were chained or at times flogged in their cells. During a 2009 visit to New Bell prison in Douala, foreign government officials found that prison guards chained disobedient or violent prisoners in a tiny disciplinary cell where they were reportedly beaten and denied access to food. Security forces stripped prisoners and detainees, confined them in severely overcrowded cells, denied them access to toilets or other sanitation facilities, and beat them to extract confessions or information about alleged criminals. Guards and non-local government organisations reported rapes among inmates. Individuals incarcerated in New Bell Prison for homosexual acts suffered discrimination by violence from other inmates. And this is where Ivo Kuka found himself imprisoned for 18 months, just for being a member of the SCNC. The SCNC is routinely persecuted by the state in Cameroon. For example, on February the 9th last year, police arrested and detained for 5 days Chief Ayamba Eti Otun and 2 other SCNC members for circulating tracts calling for the independence of southern Cameroon and warning the government against the mistreatment of southern Cameroonians. On October the 1st last year, the anniversary of the unification of Anglophone and Francophone regions of Cameroon, security forces disrupted SCNC meetings and protest rallies in Limbe, Tiko, Abue, Bamenda and Kumbo. Security forces also sealed off the residences of several SCNC leaders and arrested and detained SCNC activists in Limbe, Bue and Tiko. I spoke to Ivo in a secret telephone interview today in the Immigration Detention Centre in Harmondsworth, and he told me a little bit more about his experiences.
You were a member of the SCNC, is that right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us what is the SCNC?
Yeah, the SCNC is an activist group from the English-speaking Cameroon. We are patriotic fighting towards the getting the independence of the English speaking. So we celebrate every year, the 1st of October, we gather and celebrate that day. They refused us in a referendum in 1951, 1st of October 1951, they refused us to secede from the French Cameroon. So we celebrate that day as our Independence Day each year. So the SCNC is an activist group in Cameroon fighting for the independence of Southern Cameroon.
And when you, during the celebrations that you have on the 1st of October, I understand there's been some problems with the security forces.
Each year, every year.
What happens? What do they do?
They usually never want us to carry on any celebration at all. Every year when we're preparing, they have their agents all over the place. When we are preparing meetings to hold our meetings on 1st of October, they will arrange to arrest most of us before that day. So, which means on the 1st of October, just few of us who are lucky to be out there will celebrate that day. Many will be in detention. And at the end of the day, some will end up in prison. And if you have somebody to look to come in for your intervention, maybe you will be released along the way. So the security forces always obstruct our celebration every year. There's never been a celebration that the security forces have never come to disturb.
Wow. And so people are sent to prison before it's even happened. So they haven't even done anything yet. They just arrest them in advance.
Yeah.
And you're not doing anything illegal. You're just having a party.
Illegal. We just gather to celebrate the day. We chant the songs of freedom. That's just all. We hoist our flag, the Southern Cameroon flag. That's just all. But they keep on disturbing us every year. Every year they don't allow us to carry on any activity.
And so the conditions in prison are quite, I understand in Cameroon, to the people that are taken off to prison, I understand the conditions are very bad.
Conditions are really bad. I myself, 2001, I was arrested at the eve of, we were preparing for the annual celebration. I was arrested, we were about 8 of us. They sent us to New Bell Prison. I was there for 3 months. I succeeded in running away from prison, but they caught me after. I made 18 months prison. They sentenced me 18 months in New Bell. And it was really, really bad. The experience I got there was not good at all.
Yeah, and so they're very overcrowded.
Really overcrowded. In one cell, you will find about 15 people. They sleep on the floor. No mattress on the floor. They're just on the ground floor, like I just said. Everybody's sleeping like that. There are bed boxes everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, in the prison, by then the outside floor was just muddy. So most of us had these infections on the toes. All our toes were swollen all along the place. So it was really a bad situation, a bad experience that I passed through there.
And the guards in the prison are very violent towards the prisoners, is that right?
They are really, really violent. And those of us that we don't have anything there, because there it is some sort of they grade the prisoners. They grade them. They are those who don't have anything. They are those who come in maybe like those that Cameroon, the government is sending in now for embezzlement. They have their own section. So they are the middle class. Those of us that will go in for political, for this secessionist issue, we don't have any say in the place. So they keep on torturing us all along the place, all along the day. They keep on torturing us. You have to get up early in the morning. It's one routine that we do every morning. You take a bucket. You go and carry. It's bad. You go and carry feces. You transport feces in a bucket.
Sewage.
Yeah. You transport it with your hands, bare hands, no gloves, nothing. You transport it with your bare hands to a pipe leading outside. So that was a really bad experience as I passed through.
And you said that torture takes place inside the prisons.
Say again.
The torture takes place inside the prisons itself.
Systematic torture takes place inside the prison.
Yeah. It doesn't happen somewhere else.
They got another prison in the prison. That one's bad.
So there's another prison inside the prison.
There's another prison inside the prison. When you go in, when they say you are a secessionist, you are from this or this. When you are in the prison already, so someday they will send you into another prison inside the prison.
And what's that called? That other the one? What do you call it when you're there?
They call it in French. They call it in French. They just call it Cellule D. So, Cell D.
Right.
Yeah, we don't know what it means, but we just know they call it Cellule D. In there.
Yeah.
It's just a small square meter. You can just sit, and your legs, you can stretch your legs up to the end. You bend your legs, and you are seated. The place is stinking. It's just that the toilet is passing behind there. You see everything passing just around you. No light in there. You are there like that. They come, they remove you, they will hang you up and down, they beat you under your soles all through the day.
They beat on your soles. You mean on like they beat you on? They hang you upside down and beat you on the soles of your feet.
They hang you and they beat you on the soles of your feet. They don't put any wound on you anymore now.
Yeah.
Because they are afraid. They know if they inflict any wound on you, physical wound that you'll see maybe it'll cause them problem. So they just do it systematic now. They hang you on a chair and put you upside down and beat you on the soles of your leg. That's it.
And what are they using?
They use these copper wires.
Yeah.
Yeah, they double, they even triple them and wrap them, they use them. And there's another one they call in French matraque. I don't know the...
Is it like a cable or something?
Yes, like a cable. So you use it, it's something in a rubber form. It doesn't happen to every person there in prison. It depends on what body is in prison.
So because you were there as a political prisoner, you were singled out for this kind of punishment?
Yes, exactly.
Right, whereas people who'd committed fraud or corruption or whatever they weren't treated like that.
Yeah, they don't have problem. They have their own section. They have they got the money. They have their own section. They call that section cellule 18.
Uh-huh.
18, yeah? Cell 18 is for the rich people.
It's not just a failure of control in the justice system or something. It's a political instrument. This torture is being used to punish members of the SCNC and the English speaking minority.
Yeah, forcing us to denounce our partaking in the SCNC. They torture us and tell us to denounce that we know.
They force you to denounce the SCNC.
Yes, exactly. So that torture is to force us to denounce from the SCNC.
So, like when the Romans tortured the early Christians to get them to renounce their faith, it's almost, and of course it doesn't have any. It's a symbolic thing, isn't it, to get people to renounce it?
Yeah, it's symbolic. That's the thing.
Yeah, there's the short term effects of experiencing something like that, but there's long term effects as well, aren't there? I mean, having an experience like that, it must affect you, you know, it must make life difficult for you now?
It affects you psychologically. It affects you all around. So,
yeah.
Like me, in my case, but in particular, this my I got my right leg. For all these years, I don't know what is really wrong with the leg. Because I was really heated on this leg. And I feel it. I cannot bend down and get up the very moment. I bend down to get up as most quick for some seconds. I stretch the leg straight before I get up. So I don't know what went wrong with the gun, because I was hit with the leg, the gun, on the leg with the gun.
They beat you with a gun on the leg?
Yeah.
And it's caused this permanent damage to the nerves or something like that?
Yeah. For all these years, I don't really know. When I touch it like that, I feel the pain right from the bone. So I think maybe it affected the bone right inside.
Yeah. And you haven't, and as you discussed with Ariadne, you haven't had any, there hasn't been a medical report done in this country. They haven't sort of.
I went to I did the rule 35 here in the detention center.
Yeah.
I outlined all those what I went through, and they just wrote part of it on the rule 35. All the other one, I talk about the sexual assault, sexual abuse. They did not include it in the medical report.
How could they not include that in the report? It's so critical to your claim. What you're saying happened to you. Why for them to just ignore that? Outrageous.
When I took the report, I went back. I booked an appointment. I went back to the medical team. I told them, please. I talked to the doctor about this sexual assault. I have this report in front of me. It's not mentioned and very vital to my claim. The doctor on duty that day told me she cannot do second rule 35. I should do with that. So I had no say. I just came.
And it's not like it's easy to talk about these things. It's hard to talk about these things.
It's just that the situation I'm finding myself in, I must voice it out. I want to let the people know what's happening, what's going wrong.
Yeah. And it's very important to do so, because otherwise people will just presume everything's being done properly, everything's being done fairly, that there's a system for this and people are being treated the right way. But it's not happening, is it?
It's not happening. It's not happening at all. I got another example here. I was just trying to talk to my solicitor about that. In my refusal letter, what I'm claiming asylum on, there are three articles I discovered of recent that they published over the net. In those articles, the first article is talking about four attackers on the bridge. The second article is talking about five attackers, and the third article is talking about 10 attackers on the bridge. In my interview, I told the officer that I transported four people in my car who came on the bridge and launched the attack. So he refused me. He undermined my credibility there, because he read the article talking of five attackers. He did not consider the one that was talking about 10 attackers and the other one talking about four attackers. He just considered the one that was against me. Meanwhile, there were three articles talking, giving different number of attackers on the bridge. So I don't know on what base he forgot about the article that I was talking about, and just considered that the one that was against me. And all of those articles are on the net.
And this is part of this negative credibility problem. Do you feel that they're just looking for a reason to say no to you? They're trying to find evidence to suggest you're lying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're trying to find evidence to suggest that I'm lying.
And you were there. You had these guys in your van. You know how many of them there were. And there's corroboration online to say.
Yes. I was the one who transported them. Yeah. And they even forget they forget to mention that a few minutes in the attack, another boat came from the sea with a good number of persons inside, still dressed in the military uniform.
Yeah, so there were other people coming from elsewhere. So you had, but it's not to say that was the only people that were on the bridge.
Yeah, those were not the only people on the bridge. I brought in four. A few minutes later, a boat came from underneath with another group of persons inside with guns shooting as well to join the other four that I brought. I transported. So the UKBA just concentrated on the article. It saw that talking about five attackers.
And this is something that has happened in other cases before. The information that they're relying on to make these initial decisions is often incorrect, and it's often out of date, or it's often contradicted by other sources, and yet they're turning around and accusing you of lying about the situation, and you haven't been given a decent chance to appeal against that and say, actually, no, you can't say I'm lying because I've got this evidence, you know, I can prove it. Here's other evidence that backs up my story. You haven't been given the chance to do that.
I told them in the meantime that I got evidence to support my claim. I got evidence to tell them what really happened. And I was waiting for those evidences to come from Cameroon. The following day, in less than 24 hours, I was issued a refusal letter. There was no possibility for me to make to produce documents from Cameroon within that period of time, within 24 hours.
So having fled the country, you've got to somehow get original documents out of the country to you in a detention centre within 24 hours.
Or they're
going to refuse your claim.
UKBA was insisting on the originals of the document. I got a newspaper that's talking about my story with my names in it, with my photos in it. So I was trying all these names for me. I was trying that I should lay hands on the newspaper for them to send it to me here. It could maybe take 1 week, but within 24 hours, I was issued a refusal letter. The newspaper came after my refusal letter. So the process they call the fast track, I don't understand what they really mean by that.
So
just to send us back, just finding our death sentences, as I can say.
This is the problem, it's this fast track system. It's a kind of no chance system. You just aren't having the opportunity to have your case heard properly.
Exactly.
So, do you know why you were referred to, why your case was made a fast-track case in the first place? How did you become a victim to this system?
I was never told. I showed up to the authorities. I fear persecution in my country. I cannot be living in another country that I can be protected and be living in hiding. I showed up to the authorities. I called them. I booked an appointment. I told them I want to claim asylum. I share my life back home. They said, okay, they gave me an appointment. I went there on the 19th. I presented myself. They gave me one officer. She interviewed me. She called a screening interview. I filled in some forms, and we did the screening interview. Moments later, she came and took me to a down floor, and handed me over to certain officers. It's there that she told me that I was on a fast track. By then, I never knew what fast track. So I was just seated there. I saw the officers in the consent came, opened a door, sent me inside, and locked the door. I discovered that maybe I was in cell already, because I was there alone by that time. I began to ask them, what's happening? One officer told me that they're going to take me to Hammersworth. I said, for what? They said, no, there is better. There you'll be free, you can move around and all the like. That's the information they gave me. I was there by 9 o'clock. I saw a van came, put me in the van, and brought me to this detention center. I never knew what fast track was. I came here after 5 days before they called me and told me I had to go for interview. It's from the center that I knew. I was asking, what is fast track? What's fast track? Nobody was trying to explain it to me. Nobody from the UKBA told me what fast track was.
So they just told you're inside this process with no information about what's happening, no information about the implication of it, waiting. Okay, presumably at some point I'm going to get to sit down with the solicitor and we'll discuss my case and somebody will tell me what I have to do and I can get my evidence together, but no. Didn't happen.
The first I saw my solicitor just few minutes before my interview.
Yeah.
I haven't spoken with my solicitor before. The UKBA came with the solicitor. I saw the solicitor a few minutes. We just had a small briefing, not up to 10 minutes, and that's it. Interview started.
Wow.
And that's what it was.
And we have to ask, what do you think will happen if you were to be removed to Cameroon at this stage?
If I'm being sent to Cameroon, therefore means the UKBA is signing my death warrant, because in Cameroon, I will not be... There's no security for me there at all.
Yeah,
there's no security for me there, as I know, based on my knowledge. The UKBA is sending me back to Cameroon. They're sending just my death warrant.
And they know that this is a country where there are human rights abuses. They know that you would be liable to torture and detention there. Yeah. And you feel they're signing by refusing your case, by not hearing you properly, by putting you on this fast track system, they're signing your death warrant.
Yep, exactly. Yep, I want people to know what's really happening those of us seeking asylum, those of us seeking protection, we are not given the opportunity to properly claim our asylum. Really, let people know. I want to point out what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think you've done that very clearly. I want to say thank you for talking to us today.
You're welcome.
Campaigners, including the NCADC, say that victims of torture should not have their claim processed in the detained fast-track system. Ivo's medical report in detention shows the scars from stitches in his lip that he needed after being beaten with a gun. Ivo also told the doctor about the sexual abuse he endured, something he had felt embarrassed to share with the female interviewing officer in his screening and asylum interview. The doctor did not put this information on his Rule 35 medical report. Ivo was told in his asylum interview he could submit further evidence. Ivo had arranged to have documentary evidence supporting his case sent across from Cameroon, but his asylum application was refused the day after his interview, giving him no time to submit the newly arrived evidence. In detained fast track, you only have a few days to appeal a negative decision. Ivo's lawyer told him she was working on the appeal, but with just hours to go until the appeal deadline, told him she was no longer representing him. At this point, there was no way Ivo could get alternative legal representation for his case. He sent a handwritten letter to the tribunal pleading for more time, and he has received no response. In this case, a man has been falsely accused of lying. He has not been given the chance to appeal. He has not been allowed a full medical report. He has not been given the chance to provide evidence. And now he is going to be removed from the country and possibly sent to his death. Ivo Kuka has not been given a chance at all. This is all being done in our name, but this is not our justice. This is not the great British justice that is world famous. And this is not the great British justice that we want. Whatever one's political opinion about the issue of asylum or immigration, we must have a system that is fair. This is not fair. And this goes beyond just this one case. How many other people have arrived in our country after being tortured for being democratic, only to be sent back to face further punishment? How many people will it happen to next? And with the public sector cuts and the austerity and the tough immigration rules, how do we know it isn't going to get worse? This is about our government, your government, being just. If you want to get involved, there are a few simple actions you can take to save Ivo. You can write to the Home Secretary, Theresa May, and tell her Ivo Kuka is a victim of torture and should not be detained in the fast-track system. You can fax her, email her, or kick it old school and send her a letter. There's a link to the campaigns page on our website, www.refugeeradio.org.uk, with the full details. Or for those of you without internet access, you can grab a pen now and I will give you the address to write to her. It is Theresa May, MP, 2 Marsham Street, London, SW1 4DF. That's Theresa May, MP, 2 Marsham Street, London SW1 4DF. You will need to include Ivo's Home Office reference number, which is K168 0050. K168 0050. It will take you 2 minutes to contact her, and if you do it in writing, you get a response on that nice yellow House of Commons stationery, which always gives me, anyway, a sense of having actually done something democratic and important with my day. If you would rather send her a fax, the number is 0207 035 4745, or email mayt@parliament.uk. Taking this simple action now could save one man's life. In other news this week, according to Amelia Hill in The Guardian, 23rd of October, unacceptable force was used by G4S staff deporting a pregnant woman. This is a disclosure in the first report of prisons inspector on the UK border agency's family-friendly, in inverted commas, Cedars unit near Gatwick, outside of Brighton. A pregnant woman in a wheelchair, that's a pregnant woman in a wheelchair, was tipped up and had her feet held by staff from Group 4 Security, G4S, the firm behind the Olympic security shambles, as she was forcibly removed from the country. The disclosure comes in the first report into conditions at a new centre designed to hold families facing deportation from the country. Nick Hardwick, the Chief Inspector of Prisons, and his team made an unannounced inspection of Cedars, the UK Border Agency's new pre-departure accommodation near Gatwick, where families are housed for the final 72 hours before they are removed from the UK. Nick Clegg promised in the Liberal Democrats' 2010 manifesto that he would put an end to the detention of children. Replacing the controversial Yarlswood Detention Centre with Cedars was at the heart of the Coalition's family-friendly removal policy. Sorry, that should be family-friendly in inverted commas. Family-friendly removal policy. Inspectors also reported that although most work from family escort staff was commendable, they observed unprofessional behaviour by an officer on a different escort in the hearing of children. Judith Dennis, policy officer at the Refugee Council, was quoted as saying, "The numbers of children in detention are increasing. The government acknowledged then how harmful this practice is for children, so why are they still continuing to do it?" Amongst its praise for the new facility, the report reveals the shocking use of substantial force on a pregnant woman, which is completely unacceptable, she added. Cedars can accommodate up to 9 families at a time in self-contained apartments, with a range of activities provided by Barnardo's, which campaigns for an end to child detention, and Group 4 Security, delivering security and facilities management.
Sweet mother. my mother no good job. She not dey tire her. Sweet mother, I no go forget the suffer where you suffer for me. Yeah, yeah. Sweet mother, yeah. Sweet mother, oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet mother, I'll never forget you. But the suffer you suffer for me.
Listening to the program, this was a joint production between Refugee Radio and Afghan Voice Radio. If you want to find out more, you can visit the website www.refugeeradio.org.uk or Afghan Voice Radio at www.afghanvoice.org.uk, where they have several hours, if not hundreds, of podcasts of previous programs and live streaming that you can listen to.